And it's the same with an activity like watchmaking. I mean, it's very similar in that it's got its own language, its own culture, its own jargon, its own preoccupations.
Welcome to another edition of Buyer Talk. I'm very honored and pleased to have with me a real English gentleman, Nick Fox. He just came from Geneva, and now he's over the way to Zurich, to London again. Thank you for accepting our short notice invitation.
It's great to see you, René. I've missed seeing you, you know?
I can say the same. I felt pretty lonely only with Swiss retailers last year at the Grand Prix in Geneva, while nobody of our foreign friends were here. And I think the world has changed dramatically. I feel it's not the same as it used to be, and I'm afraid it is never going to be the same as it was before.
Never is the same as it was before, really, though everything does change. But it was so sad, because, I mean, it's prevented us doing things that we took for granted. I mean, to come to Switzerland, I've got a total of 5 COVID tests to get here, to go back, and then to get released from my house. And I've got laissez-passer, I've got invitation letter, I've got locator. I mean, it's literally like going to Moscow in the Cold War, you know, except not quite as easy.
Well, it is also perhaps a little bit due to the fact that we have around Christmas, a group of English people came and they were spreading right away the new form of COVID virus in Werribee and other places.
And then they all disappeared.
Yeah,
they disappeared. Hundreds of them disappeared overnight.
The Swiss government was so stupid, they announced that the police will make a raid over them, and they all disappeared, and they spent beautiful holidays, different places in Wallis and in Graubünden, yes. And so the whole thing got even worse than it was.
Yeah.
But anyhow, this is one of the things. I doubt how long, much longer, the people will accept this situation also in Switzerland.
You know, it's terrible. I mean, I had the COVID, and it's one that you can, I would recommend avoiding it.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a bore. It's a bore.
And did they afterwards make the injection on you also, or do they say now you're...
Yeah, I have that as well. So, you know, I have everything, yeah.
Okay. But it is... for us, it's a little bit a big discussion. Should we not? Because there are also many people thinking that there is not only good effects, but also side effects.
My favorite cartoon was 2 rats talking to each other.
I saw that too.
Yeah.
They tried on human instead of us.
They said, we see how it works on the humans. I don't know. Let's see. I think I feel quite sorry for the AstraZeneca Oxford people, because they make this thing about giving the vaccine for cost, and then... Everybody says you can't use it on Germans, and you can use it on Germans, and then old Germans, and then young Germans, and then old Frenchmen, and young Frenchmen, and Macron says it's good, and it's... I mean, you know, I don't know. It's all above my head. I just like to stick to watches, you know.
I think that brings us to a nice subject to talk.
Very
much
so. Because
we are surviving in any case, and thank God I have not had COVID, and I have not got injection, but I have to see what the future will give. But let's talk about watches. I heard that now in France they close elite schools. You were Oxford student.
And, yes.
It's a crazy thing. I think there is no danger for English institutions like Oxford or Cambridge that they will be closed down. The French government closes the most elite school now, which all the presidents of France have.
ENA. ENA, the school ENA in France.
Yeah, ENA. That's it. I hope this is not the case in England.
I don't know. I mean, Oxford's changed a lot anyway since I was there.
Awesome.
That was about 100 years ago I was there, you know, so...
Did you raw for them?
No. You mad?
That's the only...
Are you mad? I drank for them.
I drank for them. I never got it into these kind of high elite schools, but I was always watching the race between the two schools.
Yeah.
I don't know the last few years if it was Cambridge or Oxford.
I think it was Cambridge again this year. Okay. They held it in a different part because of the COVID. Held it in a different part of the country this year. So
okay. Why not exporting one's a good idea to another place?
No, keep it in London, I think.
Keep it back in London.
Yes.
Well, thank you for being here again. And I don't have really to say a lot because Nick is a historian. He is an author and he's a journalist. I think you were working for the Financial Times at the time.
I do work for the Financial Times.
Even now, yes.
Yes. I also edit for Vanity Fair, the watch magazine. Vanity Fair on time. I am on the editorial board of the Patek Philippe magazine.
I know.
And I do, yeah, I write history books and I write for GQ and all sorts of, yeah, I mean, I lose track. I mean, I don't lose track. I mean, I could always, I'm always grateful for work and could always have more. You know how it is.
It is, as you say, and many things happen in the present and in the near future. I think today it is very important to have a cultural DNA about the watch company, whatever. You also wrote a book about cigars, I heard.
I wrote three books about cigars, yes, but the last one is the one I practiced a bit, and then I think probably the one that is now is probably the best.
That's always the best if the last interview you make or the last book you make is the best. I always say it gets worse normally with the people that make two or three books. But when you say the third is the one that you feel it is now the completion of all my knowledge.
And nothing is the completion, but you know how it is. I'm getting close. Things are getting better. And no, cigars are a great thing that I love. And I make these little films with my eldest son who's in the cigar business.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's like watches. I like the sort of cultural aspect of them because it's not just a product. It's a cultural object and it's got this specific national or regional characteristic to it. It's a sort of a goût du terroir, as they say about French wines and stuff like this. And it's the same with an activity like watchmaking. I mean, it's very similar in that it's got its own language, its own culture, its own jargon, its own preoccupations. And I find those worlds very absorbing. And you've got great characters in them. You know what I mean? It's not like any other sort of work. It's a métier. It's a vocation. So you follow it, you know.
I'm afraid you will walk me out of the interview, but about wine, you have never published anything, or is the British wine still not so competitive that you will try to...
The British wine, they used to make it in Roman times, I think.
Yes.
And they make it again now. I haven't drank wine or anything for 24 years or something, so I'm a bit out of practice on the wines, but I was in the wine trade. I started my professional life in the wine trade.
Good.
And I did my exams in wine.
But I'm sure you drink sometimes a cognac because smoking a cigar
No.
Oh.
You know, I was able to transfer. Luckily, I had to stop drinking, but I still was still kept the cigars. So, you know.
This is also a culture.
It is a culture. It is and very similar, you know, because it's an agricultural product to which the human ingenuity adds value.
So true. And, I see you also got in 2007 even an honor by being the Havana man in communication about cigars. Have you ever been to Cuba? Of course.
I've been going to Cuba since 1995.
Oh.
Everybody says, oh, it's going to change, and it kind of has changed, and it hasn't changed. It's a particular and a special place. You know, I'm always very happy to go. But I'm always quite glad to come home.
If I have the same feeling when I go to Russia, every time the airplane takes off at the runway, I feel, oh, now I'm done. I'm glad I'm back on the route.
How often do you go to Russia?
Oh, depending on what there are exhibitions on Fabergé eggs, on watch exhibitions. It's about every second year.
I love going to Russia. But again, like you, I'm sort of very excited to go and then very excited to be back. You know, but Russia, I find a fascinating country.
It is fascinating.
And I read a lot of the literature, you know, Solzhenitsyn and...
okay, yes, that is interesting that you have also...
Trifonov and...
wrote people that were not
Tolstoy and, yeah, all these people, yeah. I mean, it's a fascinating country, fascinating country.
Well, we know today many things about Mr. Navalny. So I don't think the news also about what is happening in the Ukraine is not very good. But it is the whole world is trying to find right now where there are the borders. And I feel politically it is a very unsafe situation we have now.
There's a lot going on. And I mean, I think it's, yeah, I mean, if you don't understand history, you wind up repeating it. And this is essentially what's happening at the moment.
Well, you see, we can talk about so many things and we did not even get to the subject of the watches.
René, it's been lovely seeing you.
It's lovely seeing you. Already the fact that we see one each other during these difficult times, it's fantastic because I have to explain that quickly to our listeners and to our viewers. We plan to make this talk already about 4 months ago.
Yes.
And you were in Spain, I think, at that time. Yes. And afterwards, you could not come to Switzerland. And you had even problems to go back to London, I think, because everything at that time was really crazy. And I feel very honored that you just called me 2 days ago saying, hey, I'm in Zurich on Saturday. And I said, I make move to hell and to heaven in order to welcome you,
you
even
kind.
With British, with tea.
With tea.
With Swiss Army chocolates.
Swiss Army chocolates.
No, but you were never really a high-grade military man, I think.
Never.
Never, okay.
Never. I don't have the inclination. I'm very bad at taking orders and I have a terrible physique. So I'd make a terrible soldier.
Okay. Try at least the Swiss chocolate.
I will. I will. Maybe I'd have joined the army had they had chocolate like this. I don't know.
That, but, I think, would be an argument for the army. All right. Now, you are one of the most connected and also respected men. Whenever I talk to an owner of a watch company, whatever, very big or small, they say there is one journalist or one expert or one whatever you want to hear, or the historian that really knows of what he talks. And he never, you're a critic, but you're not provocative. You're not trying to make bad to people which do good. And I really must say, all I heard, is it from Thierry Stern, from Philip Stern, if it is from Mr. Dufour, they all esteem you, your work for the industry. And for us, this is almost more than adding five ads in a newspaper. Also what you did in Vanity Fair, where we have been also illustrated with the most illustrious families that are in the business over the whole world. I think that is true, honest, very good journalism.
You're extremely generous in your words. Thank you very much.
Well, I can downplay, but I find no other words to say it as it is. So let's continue. I don't know. I want to know. I'm going to Geneva on Monday, Tuesday to find out what are the news. You seem to be there because you are privileged as a journalist and as a person. You have seen already most of the things in reality, which I have not touched.
I've seen a number of things in reality, but it's been very sketchy, obviously, because they have. I mean, I wasn't allowed to go to Geneva, so I had to see the products. They brought them over to London, and there are some nice things. Yeah. Nice.
You were not in Geneva to up the people like they do normally?
No, being in one-on-one meeting.
No.
I came to Zurich especially.
Thank you again.
No, not at all.
I make sure the sun is coming out. Now you speak so positively about Zurich. It was sunny at least when you came in, right? Now, we have spoken about different players in the watch industry. I felt especially last year, that now it really comes down who is the elite and who are the ones that are trailing behind the elite. So I heard many people talking. There were four watch brands that made really the watch industry in Switzerland last year, such as Rolex, Patek. We have heard of Audemars Piguet and also of, you have to help me now, I forgot the name. The guy,
Richard
Mille. Yeah, you're right. Yes, you see, when something escapes me, you help me right away.
I do my best.
So what do you think about that? Is that true? I really saw in our business, 80% of the sales figure for watches were made with the two brands.
I think it's true. Yes, I think what's interesting is I've heard even from people in Brian Duffy and Watches of Switzerland was saying the same thing, that he does half his business with Rolex.
Yeah.
I mean, half your business with one brand is, when you have so many brands, is extraordinary. I mean, I think it's interesting when you see the companies that are, I mean, especially the top two, they are both in effect independent companies. Even
Thank
everybody
God.
Says independence, and you think maybe the guy making 100 watches or at maximum maybe 500 or 1,000.
Yeah.
But these are proper independent companies. And what I like is that you don't have this system of a new manager coming in, maybe from the fragrance industry, maybe from champagne, maybe from luggage.
Yeah, I've seen many, yeah.
And they say, no, you're all doing it wrong. I know what I'm doing. And then I do this. And then he makes himself look good and gets promoted to run a fashion house. And then somebody comes in and they're making their own careers, and that's perfectly understandable. And they're rewarded in a way that is, you know, motivates them to sell watches or to at least generate figures. And that's great for them. But I think when you work for a business that is at the top of its field, you can't go any higher. So whatever you do at whatever level, you're working for the best. So, and I think that also those companies, the two companies at the top, they are the ones that make watches. That's what they do. They're not making accessories. They're not making fashion. They are making proper timepieces. And but for them, it's a culture as well. It's a whole. That's what. And these. There's no. I mean, yes, you can apply modern techniques and all this kind of thing, and you have to because business changes and life changes and advertising changes and all these things. But essentially, that's what these people do. And the business is such that it's a complex amalgam. It's a cocktail of all sorts of different things. It's culture, it's manufacturing, it's business, it's history, it's all sorts of things. And for me, that's what makes it perpetually fascinating. Sorry, we're all right here.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay.
They just make a little bit noise, but that's okay.
No. I was just concerned that...
they're running out of film.
No. Happily, no, that doesn't happen these days. You only run out of batteries.
Right, we don't have to have 36.
Yeah, whirring things. Yeah. Right. I think to your question, I think... yes, it's undeniable that there are a handful of brands that with people making their business. They make great watches. It's not that other people don't make great watches.
No, they.
But at difficult times, people retreat. They gravitate towards perceived quality and reliability and also dependability. If they've been doing well for the last 50 years, they might do well for the next 50 years. And if the watch looks as good now as it maybe did 50 years ago, and people still want it. I mean, I think that's a big thing. And I know that you do that here, and you've got a lovely collection of the vintage timepieces. And if a company has a strong vintage performance, it often has a strong contemporary performance and vice versa.
Exactly.
And if there is no residual, I don't like to use terms like this because it kind of commoditizes the industry too much for my liking. But if the residual value is low, then there is less of an inclination to keep these things, less of an inclination if they are less financially valuable. It's natural that, you know, people will think it's a less valuable thing to them, so they won't treat it as well. So you have the same watch effectively from 60 years ago from Patek Philippe or other companies, and the Patek Philippe will be worth 10 times what the other watch is worth.
True.
And on absolute criteria, it's not 10 times better. It doesn't tell the time 10 times as well. It's not made with 10 times as much gold. And yet there's something, that magical thing, that makes it 90% more attractive.
It's as you say, I love vintage watches. We started in 1963 to do vintage watches, which we called at that time antique watches, because most people collected at the time big clocks and pocket watches. It's only an invention, I'd say, popular since the 80s, 90s, the wristwatches. And today it's only almost wristwatches in the auction market. But when I look at you, I must say, new Nautilus with the green dial would really fit you perfectly with the outfitting you have today. I'm afraid if I ask you now the question, what has been in your eyes the most popular things that were presented in Geneva, that I will have even longer waiting list than I have already now. But you are a man that has always been able to identify pieces also that are going to be future collectible pieces.
I don't know about that. I mean, I like the things I like for certain qualities they have, and they have an integrity. I mean, I think our friend Carl Friedrich Schäufele does a fantastic job.
Oh, yes, I think.
And for me, there was a watch I put, they're stopping the Qualité de Fleurier, because I think it's probably, knowing Carl Friedrich, is too difficult. I mean, he made himself an exam that he couldn't pass. He said, I want it to be so hard that no watch will ever get through. That's very him, you know.
Well, that's why he has now Bear too. He can make even a more complicated and complex movement on this side. I really admire him.
I love that guy. And I love the family. And I think that they do, you know, they're a proper all service company. You know, they do, it's like what I like about, it's not just streamlining, like say your modern brand would say, we do very well with steel sports watches, so we kill everything else. And Patek the same, they do men's dress watches, men's semi-complicated, men's fully complicated, sports, women's, I mean, everything. And, you know, you get that again with what Carl Friedrichs does. You've got, and I mean, one of my favorite watches this year was a very simple sector dial time only watch that he did, 25 pieces only.
Oh.
Beautiful, beautiful watch. So elegant. I put it on my Instagram just because it looked great with, I mean, I think it looks great. And I think also that he can do the simple things so beautifully.
I'm sorry, I did not mind to interrupt you. Is it from the Mille Miglia family?
No. It's the LUC.
Ah, LUC,
but okay. Really nice, René. Okay. I urge you to check it out. It's a beautiful watch.
I will certainly do. And I'm always treasuring the moments I can share with Carl Friedrich or with the young generation of the family.
And
then, they're very nice
they're
people.
They're great. Do you remember when he always wins at the Carl Friedrich Schäufele Prize at the Grand Prix? And do you remember one year they said he wasn't... do you remember there was that thing about how they were worried he was going to vote for himself or something like this?
Yes,
and I said, no, he's such a gentleman. He'll vote for everybody else before he votes for himself.
Yeah, and it was a good thing because now also other brands like Audemars Piguet were joining into the jewelry estate. And for us, it's interesting because it brings us another aspect to make the credibility of the jewelry also more visible, because what we decide behind closed doors is always a little bit something that can be doubted. And
you know, you and I have done it now for a couple of years, and you can't, because there are so many people with such strong opinions that you can't really rig it. It's not like a John Grisham film where you can rig a jury.
Absolutely.
Because everybody there are pretty strong characters. They're pretty sure of their own opinions, and they're pretty knowledgeable about, not everybody knows everything, but together everybody knows everything, and some of them know a bit of more than the other. And it's a very interesting process. I enjoy it because it also brings me, you know, in contact with the people who I can learn from and just who I enjoy seeing as well. And you know, I mean, what else was good? What else do I like about the new crop? I mean, obviously there's a very controversial watch.
Please.
The Rolex Explorer, the little one, the 36 with the bicolor.
I like it.
I prefer it actually to the 39mm, which they're replacing, because it's closer to the original Explorer size.
Right.
And I think the Rolosaur, the bicolor metal version, is very
astonishing.
Interesting.
Yeah. We both loved, obviously, the...
Well, you're wearing a bicolor today.
Yeah. I have a red and a red gold stainless steel watch, and it's called the chestnut watch from Rolex. The Italians always give them names, and that's also why they all suddenly start to become so popular. It was, I think, Mr. Patrizzi at the time started.
Genius.
With this,
yeah, I called it, I mean, all these strange names. It looks like a I don't know, Christmas tree decoration. So we call it the Christmas tree watch, and we look there. You know. I don't know. I mean, it's a funny thing. What else was good? I mean, obviously Patek, and there's more to come from Patek as you know. The green. I mean, listen, nobody's not going to want that. And oddly enough, I was very impressed by a watch that I really used to dislike. Was this not the new Polo, not the old Piaget Polo, which was a masterpiece? The old one was a masterpiece.
The original one, yes.
And I mean, if they why haven't they brought that back? I don't know. But the new one I thought was terrible. You remember the new one they did about five years ago?
It looked a bit like a
kind of cheap Nautilus. Now they've made a thin one, very thin, smaller bezel, skeletonized movement, and they said, you've got to try it on. And I said, well, you know, I don't like this watch. And you know, I'm probably going to say I don't like it. And they said, well, try it.
Try it on.
On a bracelet, it was terrible. But I changed it. They have a quick strap change system. So I did that. And I put it on. And I have to say, my mind was changed. I thought, at least this watch now has its own identity. And it's a really attractive thing. I really enjoy wearing it. It's a nice experience. So, I mean, I know Piaget is not, you know, one of your top two or top four brands or whatever, but it's one of those watches that you can pull out and enjoy. Cartier, I think, is doing very well at the moment by basically finally having understood that what people want is Cartier. They don't want...
That's right.
They don't want funny watchmaking with Cartier on the label. They want elegance. They want beauty. They want charm. And I mean, it's... I don't know. You must know more than me, but I think that their sales of watches are going... up quite dramatically as a result, or at least doing better.
Well, we hope for, but because it was dramatically going down also at one time.
Yeah, so they've got...
We have to be honest on both sides.
Yeah, no, I agree, I kept saying it was...
Okay, but they did not win parts of the market. It was exactly brands like Patek and Royce. Even they made less watches, they could gain
market shares.
And that is what's important. I always say bioeconomics too. When business is bad, we can be better than the average retail store. When everybody is good, doing good, we also are good, but we cannot make the difference.
Yeah.
So it is during the bad times that you must make the difference.
But that's why you're a successful businessman and I'm a poor writer.
No.
So, I mean, you know, Rene, that's why you understand this.
But, okay,
I mean,
follow my advice to buy vintage watches, then you will be able to pre-finance your books even without having anybody to pay for.
Now, you're very, very kind. Well, maybe you can help me with that. But I mean, for me, you know, but I just love looking at watches, even though I know either I won't be able to afford them or I don't even necessarily want to own that particular one. I still get excited every year, and I've been going to the fairs for not as long as you, but for a while.
Yeah.
And I remember things coming back now as vintage that I remember seeing being launched. And I think, you know, it's like seeing an old friend after a number of years. They come back and you think, oh, I remember that. I remember I hated that watch when it came out, and now it seems to be really popular or something.
Sometimes it's love on the second view. That's what I call. And also, I think Bulgari has made in the last few years interesting pieces, which before they were a little bit mainstream, but now they succeed even in
the
ultra.
It had a great period with Gianni Bulgari. Then it went through this very... Do you remember the Asioma watch? This was a terrible thing. That straight sides and curved top and bottom. It was like a half round, half square.
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah.
That was perhaps one of the...
The worst designs they ever made, yeah.
Yeah, or anybody ever made for that matter, I think.
Yeah, but also Patek tried to make a mix between a Nautilus and an Ellipse. It was never a success.
But you know now the Nautilus is a success. You can't say that to the Asioma yet.
I call it the Naughty watch, not the Nautilus.
The Nautilus. The Nautilus.
That's right. No, this is also during the time they were producing, no one was interested. And now where it's not anymore easy available, it becomes a collector.
The Neptune as well. Neptune. And that bracelet on the Neptune was insane. That was a really great bracelet.
Indeed. I like many watches that Patek made, also the Grease line, also the Flame.
Le Flamme.
So these were also watches that were not always earning the biggest success during they were produced, but now they also more and more got collectible. Yeah. Even they are not on my watch list, honestly.
No, but Ellipse, for example, is a watch that I've always liked.
You have to have that.
And it's there was a time, I mean, there was something like 60 different iterations of that product in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And then it fell out of fashion. And now I think it's coming back. But they had Ellipse lighters. They had Ellipse astrological pendants. They had Ellipse key rings. They had... It was like a brand within a brand. You know, that was a fantastic thing. And also, you know what I love? Midas. Rolex Midas.
Oh, yes. I love that too.
I've got two of those Midases with the box like a Greek urn. You remember?
Yeah. Oh. I remember exactly, and I don't know where I have the box right now, but I have the box, and I have only one watch, you have two, so you see, it's good, you have conviction to own what you feel you are right. I collected only in order to, as an achievement of Rolex, but it was never the big breakthrough really on the market.
No, but it came very early. That was a watch from the very early 1960s. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Everybody says, oh, it's a 70s watch, but it was very early 1960s. And then it became slightly diffused.
Bulky, yeah.
But I have to say that watches like that really interest me because they show a side. I mean, I love things like the double red and all this kind of thing. But for me, this is a different kind of interest. It's more like a stamp collecting type of interest where you're looking for tiny details. And that's great. And I understand that. But first of all, these things are beyond me financially. And secondly, it's almost more interesting for me to look in the corners where people aren't always looking, you know, because you learn more that way, you know, and you learn why a company that was also doing amazing watches like the Submariner or the GMT Master or the Explorer was also doing these really exotic pieces. Like, the Midas was extreme.
Extreme. It was really extreme. Also, the size of it.
Yeah, it's like wearing a kind of bar of gold bent around the wrist.
That's it. But at that time, it was many customers came into our shop and they were just, the watch is not very heavy. The people bought the watches at that time also as like an ingot of gold. Yeah. They were just saying, well, for this price, I expect to have 150 grams of gold. So,
well, I think with the Midas, you got a few more than 150.
I think so too. But it was the problem anyhow that at that time, the people want to see something new, the quartz watch, the Beta 1, Beta 9.
I saw in your shop two guys taking those Beta 21s.
That's it.
Those lovely Pateks.
Yeah.
You know, there weren't many people that made Beta 21s. No. There was Jaeger did it, didn't they?
Yeah, it was
Rolex,
a group of four brands Rolex, which were developed.
Jaeger, Jaeger and Patek.
And not Udli Snart, I think, was the
Was it? I don't know.
I don't remember 100%, but they are many times teaming up together when it is important to make something on their own, yeah.
But I mean, those Beta watches are fascinating now for people to collect, I think. And also the work on the Patek bracelets on those Betas was unbelievable, you know?
Stop making publicity for us all the time. Thank you so much. I'm just teasing you. But I want to keep these a little bit rare on our store. You know, there were also some Rolex watches with an automatic movement in the cases of the
I love those.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, remember 16, 13 or 17.
Day date.
And they were so popular today.
But there's a fantastic, the sharp,
many
the sharp,
think
because
it's fake.
I love, but I love that because it's got the sharp edges of the Beta. And the Shah had a really good one in white gold with, I think, an oxblood dial.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I think that's in, I don't know who's, I think probably Claude Sfair has that in his collection.
Oh, he has so many pieces. He's also part of the jewelry of the Grand Prix d'Horlogerie where we have been
so far.
Yeah,
and he's working with Philippe Dufour now.
And now he makes a special watch. I heard 25 pieces they want to make.
Yeah, I read about it in the Financial Times, How to Spend It. I interviewed them both. We had a great picture of them on the mountains, both in those kind of red, heavy lumberjack jackets from Canada. You
I
know.
Saw them. They both have beards now.
Both had beards and pipes. Both had beards and pipes and sunglasses. It was really, it was the best picture, I think, of the year so far for watchmaking. You know,
I wanted to make a story with Philippe Dufour, but he said it right now. It is not very good. He's fully in that project. So I said, I will try later on. Hopefully his health and all these wishes that he wants to make this thing happen will come together. By the way, I think you were also at the anniversary of Philippe Dufour about 2 or 3 years ago when he celebrated with his wife and his family. No, we're not there.
No.
But it was a very nice gathering. And I say Philippe Dufour is our longtime president of the jewelry. He was already jewelry present when I was still in another jewelry in Lausanne for another magazine. Before I went to Geneva in that one. And he's a great
person. He's a great guy. And I love him because he's always smoking his pipe.
He never changes. And he really is the only watchmaker that still represents the spirit of production like in the 19th or 20th century.
Not the only one, but I think one of a very, very small number. There's that young guy, Rex Hepp, who does a nice watch.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of... oddly enough, around the world, there's some Japanese watchmakers who do
foreigners
a nice,
also from Scandinavia.
Yeah, foreigners particularly.
Very good, very good. I like that. You know, the Swatch industry, I'm happy if it stays Swiss for the most, but I'm happy that all over the world, also watchmaking schools like from Vostep are, and this is a great thing because we need to bring our culture, not just with the watches, but also with the culture, how they are treated, how they're repaired. That was at the time the reason why Omega went down in America, because they never were caring for after-sales service.
That is what I heard. Mm-hmm. And I think now Omega is having a bit of a renaissance.
Of course, it's an American
also. They got great. I mean, I love this new one they did, the new Speedmaster with the new movement. So it looks almost exactly the same.
Exactly.
But almost everything has changed. I mean, they made the 2 hours extra power reserve by making the staff on the mainspring a bit smaller.
Oh.
So you could make 2 extra hours. I mean, this level of detail is fantastic. And they made it Metas and, you know, they're taking real care to kind of not make pastiche antique, but to do watches that respect the past, but also incorporate the best of today.
Absolutely. I like Omega very much.
I think they're doing a great job right now.
And I like the Hayek family. They are doing well, even so they are blamed for everything. that is not going to, they speak up also against the Swiss government when they're the only one that also have that political voice, which comes, of course, still from the father. What's
yes, unfortunately, the father never really cared too much for me. He wasn't, we never really hit it off, unfortunately. Mm. But I have to respect his achievement. I mean, he was extraordinary.
I have to tell you, you got to know Mr. Hayek Senior, especially when you did wrong. So you were doing always good, so we never got to meet him. But I tell you, when something was not good, he was taking the phone
he wanted to know why
we did not do better or why
Jesus
we can make
Christ.
This or
only
that.
To sell him, I've been in the business of 5,000 years. We were selling watches to Julius Caesar when he came through Zurich. You still got his photograph downstairs. Coming in, going for a Beta 21, and you were advertising him to go for the La Flamme or something like that.
Hey, we are having now 261 years. That's enough with eight generations. But you're right. Things have changed a lot when I see through old magazines, publications. I see that now only about three, we have two retailers which are from Zurich, and all the others take on now either directly come from the companies or companies that are generated originally in Geneva and Lucerne. So we are very few.
But you know also what's interesting is if you look at the successful companies, again, our famous two successful companies, they have a little bit of their own retail, but they have also, they work mainly with partners and they respect the partners.
Which I think is very good, yes.
And it's a very good system because you get the, it's traditional, perhaps in the short term, you get more margin if you open your own shop. But then you think, it's very greedy and you think, okay, it's easy. And it's not easy being a retailer. It's a different thing, you know.
Thank you for saying it.
No, but it is. It is.
People always think we can quickly
make a double
but
margin
the rent
or something.
And the construction and the refurbishing all the time. You know, the companies, they want us to refurbish every 10 years. The stores, also our Patek Philippe boutique, will be refurbished next year.
I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, I still don't know what is the new concept because they have made a boutique-style magasin like in Geneva, Paris, and London. But now they don't know exactly what they should
do. But those three boutiques, those three salons are quite different places. I mean, the Geneva is very historic. The London one, I have to say, I know I'm in Zurich, but the London one is great. It's run incredibly well.
Yes.
And it's a great center of Patek excellence, and they do things with a great sense of occasion and ceremony, and they understand, like you do, the sense of occasion that comes with buying a watch.
Absolutely. And in France, they're only in Paris because they don't work anymore with retailers because it became so difficult because of the European law to handle the retailers. They have stopped to work with
them. Is that right?
And that's why they focalize only on Paris.
Is that so? I wasn't aware of that.
But France is the country where it's only Côte d'Azur and Paris, of course. They don't know the federalism as we have it here, where almost in every canton there is also a retailer because of this geographic distribution reasons.
And also presumably the weight of history as well.
Yeah. That's been born like that.
So what are you looking forward to getting to look at when you go to Geneva then to look at things?
Well, it's nice you take over now the interview from me.
No, but I'm interested.
I look out for the things that you tell me now. And of course, I'm always open for everything. I have no clue because so far this digitalization, I get all the presentation like you online or on Zoom meetings or like that.
Yep.
Now I hope really to see the owners of the companies because for me, this is where I see the things which are going on in 2 or 3 years. The present news, I will take them, but today I don't expect so much because in these times where you cannot travel really, you would have to go to Shanghai to see an analogical exhibition. But most GOs I spoke to or owners of the companies, they said they cannot go because it takes them 4 weeks for the quarantine to go.
In a government hotel, have to have a vaccine of the Chinese. Even if you've had a normal vaccine, apparently, you have to have the Chinese.
I did not know that.
I mean, that's what I've told. I mean, but God knows. I mean, I'm not going to go in a hurry, you know. I mean, it's difficult enough coming to Switzerland. So, I mean, going to China, I don't know. I'd probably die in the hotel or something like this.
I know, but you see, the English think they can already go to America again this summer. Perhaps it's possible because England has always said
come
special
to Switzerland
relations.
Instead. Good. Shop at Bayer. Go to visit the Patek Philippe Museum.
Now you look like Roger Federer saying the same.
Nothing like
Swiss
Roger.
Tourism.
I mean, I love Roger Federer, but you know, I want to become Swiss. Maybe
we
they
all
give,
love him. We all
maybe
love
they
him.
Give me a job in becoming a sort of unofficial ambassador for Switzerland. I don't
now,
know.
I give you a job. You don't have to look for another job. I give you one because of the best dressman you have ever seen. If the camera can zoom once on the rings of Nick, he wears so astonishingly jewelry and so big one. I have never seen a man like that, and I wish I would see at least wearing a man at least one ring on his finger, because this is also an industry which is fantastic and it's not sufficiently supported so
my
far.
My children love wearing, my boys love wearing rings.
But you look great with those.
Thank
really.
You.
And
thank
also
you.
The bracelet. I think it's the hair of an elephant.
Yeah,
tail.
It's from the 30s. This yeah. one, it's ancient.
Oh, good.
It's made in Nairobi, I think, in the 30s.
I had two or three customers who wanted me to wear. I spoke to the Zoo of Zurich and said, it takes a long time for them because they cannot just cut them like that. They take only like the feathers off a bird.
Can you do it? Can you do it with Zurich Zoo?
We can do it, yes.
That's fantastic. Wow. I must get you to make me something with this. It's such a good idea.
You know, impossible things we make right away. Wonders, they take a little bit longer. That's the slogan of the company.
Oh, brilliant. You are fantastic. You are fantastic.
Well, I try to be like you are also fantastic. Now let's talk about other hobbies you have. What are you doing? You said you were not in the military. You are sporty, yes?
Backgammon and I run a little bit. But not really. I mean, I like...
You're not playing golf like Winston Churchill said, a nice walk spoiled or so?
No, I shoot a little bit.
Okay, shoot.
Yeah.
And but not on birds, you shoot on the tone.
Occasional, but I'm not very good, so I don't hit them very often. And
thank God for the birds.
Yeah. And then what else do I do? Play backgammon a lot. Okay. I like backgammon. Smoke the occasional cigar, as you know.
Yeah.
And what else? What else do I do? I read a lot. Like, I've written a couple of books on art and wrote a biography of the French painter Bernard Buffet. So I like looking at paintings. And I'm quite lazy, you know, so...
You have a good humor, not lazy. You have a lazy humor or a funny humor. I
you
like
are very,
that.
Very kind.
Very British. And I look already forward to make a next interview with the subjects you just were mentioning, because time seems to run out here for today. But I'm very pleased to have you here as my guest. And I look forward to seeing you again, either on the jewelry, if it's possible, for the Geneva Watch Grand Prix, and which is the Oscars of watches. And otherwise also, whenever I can see you, it's always a great pleasure, not just because you are so colorfully dressed normally. It's just a pleasure to have people that are having a character that are standing for themselves and not trying to play
kind.
A role.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And now we want to spend some 4 minutes in private together. To our listeners, I wish you a very good show, and I hope that you will all be healthy through this situation and we see one each other soon again. Thank you for listening and watching. Bye-bye.